And I think my life motto that I like to live by is very much around being passionate in your work so that it doesn't even feel like you're working at all. So that's been a big motivator and driver of everything that I've done with my career, because I love to be passionate about what I'm working in.
Good day, my dear team. First of all, I hope you're well. And second of all, I hope you're ready for another English episode. As I told you in the last show that I recorded with Ari Hingst, I am still in Sydney for the Women's World Cup, and I am definitely seizing the proximity here to the Aussie sports world. You know, at the end of the day, I do believe that our main purpose in life should be to learn as much as possible. So I want to bring the Australian sports culture and my experience over here closer to you and let you be part of this, which is why I am very excited to be speaking to the president of Women's Sports Australia today. She explains all about this incredible organization. Of course, we're going to cover the whole topic of the World Cup in Australia here and New Zealand from her local perspective. We elaborate on how this powerful rise in momentum of female sports and soccer in particular can be maintained, and so much more. So yeah, I'm just happy to have another international team member on board, and now a heartfelt welcome to Jen Dorman. This episode is presented by Act 3. Act 3 is a cultural marketing company with expertise in the fields of strategy, creative, and experiences. And their mission is to shape the future of brands through people, community, and culture. I personally got to know them as a community of real and actually cool people who turn passion into impact. So I'm definitely very excited to make some ideas come to life together in the future. And for more information, check out the show notes. That's a beautiful, beautiful model, really, Jen. But there's a big but for me, because I feel like that's what everyone wants. And it sounds so easy if you say it like that. I know so many people who do struggle with just this, though, finding their passion, finding their, well, purpose. You didn't use the word purpose. I'm using this right now. How do you get to that point where you can just follow your passion, or even find your passion?
Yeah, I think it's a really hard thing for people to really identify exactly what their passion and their purpose is. And I think I was extremely fortunate to find my passion and purpose sort of quite early in life. And here in Australia, we often do a work experience stint while we're at school, and we do that in year 10. So I was about 15 or 16 years old, and I did my work experience with a sporting club. So it was an Australian Football League club, the club that I grew up supporting, and I worked with them for a week in their communications department, and I just fell in love with all of the work that I was doing. It was everything from like looking up newspaper articles about the team to doing interviews and writing up stories, watching the training that they were doing and writing a summary of that. And it was such a great experience that it really shaped what I wanted to do with my life. So I knew that I wanted to work in sport and that I wanted to work in sort of communications and marketing. So I sort of chose my school subjects to look at those kind of areas. And I chose a communications degree that I wanted to do so that I could, like, potentially, if it wasn't going to be sport, I could at least have a degree that was going to be transferable. So I completed my communications degree and then started looking for a job in sport because I knew that that was something I was passionate about, and I didn't really mind which sport. Like, the Australian football was like the one that I'd sampled during my work experience, and it would have been great to work in that sport, but I ended up applying for a whole lot of different jobs and ending up I've worked in lots of other different sports. So it's definitely been a really instrumental motto for me. And yeah, I was able to find that working in sport was going to be my passion and my purpose. And I think I often find, like, you don't get paid the top dollar in sport a lot of the time. It's quite competitive and it's a not-for-profit industry. So a lot of the sport that I work in anyway, and I could probably earn a lot more working mm-hmm. in a national corporation where it might be banking or superannuation or health insurance, but my passion is sport, and I'd rather be happy and jump out of bed every day to go into a job that I like. So yeah, that's sort of, for me, I was able to find that and be given opportunities. And then once I was in and working in different organisations where I was passionate and had drive and energy, I've sort of been able to progress my career after that.
That is so interesting. And I really love how you basically just described this, that you were following your instincts, your feelings, right? You were feeling this passion. So you're like, I want to stay here and see what I can make out of this. Very, very interesting.
Exactly. So yeah, I think it was definitely having great experiences along the way, and they haven't all been great. I've had a few experiences where I haven't loved the work that I'm doing, and I've sort of recognized that and said I've made a change so that I can continue to find something that I'm passionate about and that I enjoy. So yeah, it's been a very colorful career with lots of different roles, but it's led me to where I am today, which is great.
And we are definitely going, and we definitely have to dive deeper into this colorful career and all the different aspects and side facts that you are experiencing and dealing with along the way. But before we dive deeper, I always invite my guests to like properly introduce themselves once and all over again. I kind of compare it usually to like one of the FIFA cards in the FIFA PlayStation game, you know? I mean, you don't have to say how good your defense is, but
it's not very good, okay? Yeah.
Yes, Jeremy, you know, you never know. But you can, maybe just tell us the most important facts about Jen Dorman.
Yeah, no problem. So, I live in Melbourne, Australia. I'm 35 years old. I grew up in Melbourne, did all of my schooling here, did my university here. But I do love to travel. I've sort of volunteered a few times overseas and traveled quite extensively through Europe, where I've got lots of friends. And traveling is another big passion of mine. If I wasn't maybe working in sport, I'd be working in travel somehow if I could. I chose to work in sport, and currently I am the CEO of Table Tennis Victoria. And I have a voluntary role on a board for Women's Sport Australia, and we champion gender equity in sport for women and girls in Australia. So I've held that position of president for the last sort of almost 3 years. And prior to that, I've been on the board for another 3 years. So that's a little bit about me. I'm married. I've got, my lovely husband, and we live in Melbourne, very close to our families. And my biggest passion in life, if not sport, is dancing. I love dancing. I always have. So that's my sport or recreation of choice.
Perfect. That definitely sounds like a lot of fun. And of course, I am so curious about the whole women in sports or Women's Sports Australia board and their activities and your activities as president and board member, of course, as well. So let's just start digging a little bit deeper here. How did this whole organization come about? Because, you know, honestly, I don't think we have anything comparable over there in Germany.
Yeah, excellent. Well, yeah, Women's Sport Australia, I joined the board in 2017, and I was fortunate that I participated in a mentoring program that Women's Sport Australia were offering, which was all about sort of, I was recently a new manager at a job with gymnastics in Australia, and my boss said, I think this would be good for your professional development, very much about sort of communicating confidently, networking, being on boards and committees, and just your sort of career planning. And it was, yeah, a really great session that was facilitated by the former president of Women's Sport Australia. And I really enjoyed it. I was asking lots of questions and quite active in the session. And following the session, the president sort of came up to me and said, listen, you like seemed really interested and energized in the session. We've actually got a vacancy on our Women's Sport Australia board. Would you be interested in applying? And I was like, oh my goodness, that's like so flattering. Yeah. It was actually quite funny because in my mind, like I was maybe like 28 at the time or something. And I was like, oh, don't only old men join boards? Like I was still stuck in that sort of mindset that I was like,
oh. Don't say it like that. I mean, it's true, right? Probably all over the world, all board members on a regular basis at least are exactly that archetype.
Yeah, so exactly. So I was a bit like, oh, do 28-year-old girls like me join boards? Like, yeah, I'm happy to do it. But I didn't think I was the right stereotypical fit. But yeah, Carol, of course, laughed that off and said, no, 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 you're perfect. You're exactly what we want. Sort of some young, fresh energy coming in.
Love it.
So I accepted that position and I started to learn a bit more about the organisation. So Women's Sport Australia had previously been known under another name called Australian Women's Sport and Recreation Association. And that was all a bit of a mouthful. So in 2016, they'd done a rebrand into Women's Sport Australia or WSA, which was sort of a bit easier to understand and perform and promote. So we'd been incorporated in 2005 under the other name and had played a key role in being sort of the national independent voice for women and girls in sport. So we did a lot of advocacy activities sort of with the Australian government, with sort of specific sporting teams, and just making sure that women and girls were given sort of equal opportunities. We'd sort of call out things like when the men's basketball team got sent overseas and they went business class, but the women's team had to fly economy, just any of those big discrepancies and things like that, we would sort of say, we don't think that's right. Like they are just as entitled to be traveling in business class as well. So it was a very much an advocacy kind of role that we were playing, and really just trying to promote the excitement and the desire to see more women's sporting competitions happening. Mm-hmm. And in Australia, there was a big shift sort of around between 2010 and 2020. Like that was a really big decade for women's sport, where a lot of sporting competitions sort of sprung up around like the women's cricket league, the women's base, like BBL, it's called, the A-League women's competition was previously the W League, so they sort of started their competition. There's sort of long been like lots of like women's netball teams and things like that, but suddenly a lot of the men's
which
sports
just crowned themselves world champions, by the way. Congratulations.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love the Diamonds, and actually my first sport I worked in, my first role was with Netball Australia.
That's so
and
funny. I don't think there's netball in Germany. I don't think anyone, you know, the majorly German audience here, probably they won't know what we're talking about. It's insane.
Yeah, no. So it's like almost like a bit of a quasi-basketball sort of game that's predominantly played by women in Commonwealth nations, and Australia hold all the titles. We're very good, our Australian Diamonds. So netball had long been the option for girls to play. It was certainly what I played growing up. And, suddenly we've seen the emergence of a lot more domestic sort of competition. So Australian football now has a women's league, like rugby union has a women's league, rugby league has a women's league. So there's been excellent development, and that sort of shifted the role that we play at Women's Sport Australia a little bit to do more sort of promotion and amplification of the great work that's being done by these different sort of teams and tournaments and things like that. So and there's also been a lot of other groups sort of popping up, which is awesome. A few sort of the state governments have their own departments for women's sports, so we work closely with them and try and sort of share the great things that they're doing with other people across Australia so that everyone can benefit from great sort of facilities, information or board quotas, so that we're seeing more females on boards and things. So yeah, like it's quite varied, and we are a voluntary organization, so we're 11 directors who all have day jobs doing something else, and then we sort of come together every 6 weeks and with a few meetings and email checking and things in between to make sure that we're continually pushing the agenda on sort of equity for women and girls in sport in Australia.
You just said a couple of minutes ago there was this big shift happening in Australian in the sports landscape, basically between 2010 and 2020, where, you know, this uprising of all these different leagues and female sports have happened. Why do you think that happened, especially in these past 13 years? Why not earlier? Why did I guess that women have been trying to realize before and make happen before work then and not before this time period that you just mentioned?
I think that's an excellent question, because it feels like everyone just woke up sort of within a few years of each other and said, hey, why aren't we providing more opportunities for female participants? Okay. Like, they're 50% of our population. We can really open up our market if we provide more opportunities. And I think part of it is because of the development of female athletes across other sports and in domestic competitions. Like, I think there was a bit of realization that the pathway is going to be stronger if we have more domestic competitions and ways that we can harness junior talent to continue to develop, as opposed to just choosing the best, like, people to play in the Matildas sort of women's football team or the Australian women's cricket team. That actually, if we have a pipeline of 12 teams to choose from that are playing in a domestic competition, then that's going to lift the quality of the national team on the national stage, and also improve the pool of young people that we've got coming through. So I think it was sort of like seeing female tennis players emerge, female swimmers and athletes sort of doing well at the 2000 Olympics, then into 2004, 2008, 2012, that it was sort of like, hey, we can actually probably approach some of these athletes and use the same sort of conditioning staff to actually develop our own women's leagues. And we don't have to start with lots of teams. We can just start with some and start to really develop those pathway opportunities so that we can get more grassroots people playing sport and subsequently get more people into the pipeline.
And it feels like the work, especially with the Matildas that you've just mentioned, the soccer team, has been, you know, blossoming and just working out perfectly, because I'm in Sydney right now, and I just feel like everyone's speaking about the Matildas. Everyone loves the Tillies, how they call them. Everyone's just so fond of this project, of their spirit, and really wants them to go even further in this World Cup now. Please, maybe from your perspective and from your experience, merge these two words right there.
Yeah.
And share with us how, you know, have you been following this rise of this incredible team? And let's start with that.
Yeah,
second question,
no,
after your answer.
It's so phenomenal to see the work that's been done, mm-hmm. not only around the Matildas and the growth of their brand and the fantastic team of role models that they've put together, but also the really incredible effort by Australia and New Zealand to really deliver a World Cup experience that includes so many people from the Australian and the New Zealand community. It's been a really great competition. Like I was overseas in July, so I missed some of the games that were in Melbourne where the Matildas played, but I was able to go on Tuesday evening when Colombia played Jamaica, and it was just the most phenomenal experience. That there was like 28,000 people there. I would say maybe 25,000 of them were supporting Colombia, and it was like a big sort of Colombian dance party. Everyone was singing, chanting. I felt like I was in Encanto, like the kids movie. It was incredible. And when they got that goal, it was just amazing. And I think that further for the World Cup has really hit home for everyone. And the fact that the Matildas are doing so well, like the broadcast ratings are smashing all these other records from the Australian football grand final last year, the rugby league grand final, which are the beacons of the sort of Australian sporting calendar. To have a round of 16 match that the Matildas played on Monday night against Denmark smash those broadcast figures is insane. Like, we're only going to see more tomorrow when they play France. And then if we make it through that and play England next Wednesday night, that's just going to be insane. And let alone if we make the finals. So it's just, it's so exciting. And I was saying in an interview yesterday, I think it's actually been a really great thing for the sport that Sam Kerr was injured for a little bit, because it's really that there was a lot of marketing focus around Sam,
clearly, and
she was the only name that so many people knew. Whereas without Sam playing, you've sort of now got everyone who knows who Hayley Raso is and Caitlin Ford and the other people who have been kicking the goals and doing the hard work. Like, obviously it was still phenomenal when Sam Kerr came off the bench the other night.
I know, everyone gets so excited.
Yeah, but I think it's beautiful to see that it's not all just around the one role model figurehead, but actually that the whole team is such a great group of women and such a great group of role models that we're seeing all of them be able to shine and not just Sam as the captain.
So maybe you can elaborate for us one more time the status quo, actually, of football in Australia right now. I mean, female football in particular. And, you know, the whole case around the Matildas.
Yeah. So, like, I think it's funny. So I live in Melbourne, and in Melbourne, sort of, I would say soccer or football, the world game or the round ball game would be like maybe the third or fourth sort of most popular sport. So Australian football is number one. You sort of got rugby league and cricket and sort of, yeah, that they're probably up there before you'd have football, the round ball game.
Yeah.
And this has been
football,
incredible.
The round ball. No, I'm just kidding what you say. Yeah. With my
no, exactly. Because a lot of the other ones
say soccer. Yeah, football,
no,
the round
exactly.
Ball.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it's been a really incredible shift to really make the community interested in football. And it's definitely been a big brand exercise completed by the Matildas. I would say more people can probably name Matildas players than Socceroos players, our men's sort of football team. And I think it is like Australians like successful teams, and I think the Matildas have really been successful.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think there's been a great level of interest in the Matildas since the sort of their progress at the 2019 World Cup. And then subsequently they've done lots of matches in Australia to keep fans involved and really have lots of display and exhibition matches. And there's been that real marketing push around hosting the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup and being able to be a part of it. So it's really been a great time to be in Australia and to be able to support.
Most definitely. And like adding up to what you just said and so beautifully put into words, the hype is real. It's very present over here as well. And yesterday I spoke to the CEO of a globally acting sports agency, and he said, but he confirmed everything that you just said, and then he said, but the interesting and crucial thing will happen on August 21st. How will not only Australia, but even the whole female football or soccer industry be able to maintain all this work, maintain this hype? I mean, clearly a World Cup is, you know, the pinnacle, and then it will go down a little bit, but still, like, maintain this level of acceptance and interest. And yeah, how are we going to do that? How are the Australians, and especially women's sport Australia, going to do that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really good question, and I actually think a lot of thought has been put into it. The legacy piece, is as everyone's been sort of calling it, has been extremely strong, and I was fortunate to attend a lunch last Friday put on by Football Victoria, and they have a very, very strong gender equity sort of focus in football, which I think is led by Football Australia, and they certainly are carrying it out as part of sort of Melbourne and Victoria. And I think it's going to be really strong, the interest in getting sort of young girls that might have been watching the Matildas, even young boys that might have been watching the Matildas, to really come down and sort of give football a try. I would assume that there would be a lot of sort of activations and things like that. Now that so many people feel an affinity and a connection to the Matildas, that there'll be lots of sort of opportunities to sort of do clinics and sort of meet people. And I think what's really great is that the domestic competition, the A-League Women's, will start up in the second half of this year, so in a few months, so that people who have really been interested in watching the Matildas play will now be able to see these players playing for Sydney or Melbourne or whichever sort of clubs that play in this competition, so that they can start to get along to more sort of football matches and, yeah, show their support. So I think that a lot of thought has been put into this, and that we're going to see some really fantastic results.
That would be incredible. And I personally feel like this is really, you know, very sustainably done, or has been, as you said, put out there in a very long-term kind of approach. I've been to this conference the other day here at Luna Park in Sydney. It was called The Winning Playbook. Have you heard about it?
I have. I've seen some of the pictures, and yes, I know a few people that went along. Was it amazing?
It was incredible. And what I was going to say, based on my experience over there at this conference, was that this whole Australian, because obviously most people were Australians who were attending, that this is such a diverse and well-educated and very woke community already. I was a little bit, you know, and this is a very very particular experience of mine, very subjective, obviously. I shouldn't dare to actually judge the whole picture.
No,
that's generalize. But I felt, at least in this moment, that compared to the German landscape in sports, Australia is so much further and is so much realer and already better in so many ways regarding equity and the work that it's done. Do you have any kind of comparison to other countries abroad?
Yeah, well, I think, like, because we're sort of that national independent body, we often look at sort of what's being done overseas by other organisations sort of similar to us. So we have a look at sort of the movement of the Women's Sports Foundation in the US, which is sort of funded by Billie Jean King, and the work that they are doing around sort of females in sport and Title IX and some of those kind of things. We also look to the UK, and there's sort of Women in Sport UK, and we're fortunate to have as one of our board members for Women Sport Australia, the former CEO of Women in Sport UK. So she brings a lot of learning around sort of how they've looked at things in the UK. And sort of even a little bit closer to home, there's Women in Sport sort of New Zealand, and mm-hmm. they've done some incredible things. They're obviously co-hosting this World Cup, and they hosted a big international working group Women in Sport Summit last year, which was incredible. I was able to attend. So, yeah, like I think there's a lot of sharing of ideas, and it's different because the funding model is different. In all these groups, a lot of them are sort of, some of them are philanthropic, some of them work with government, so there's government funding, some are sort of relying on commercial donations, mm-hmm. so there's differences. But I think in Australia we definitely have been working in the gender equity space for a while, and mm-hmm. we've now even probably shifted more into making sure that we've got cultural and linguistic diversity. We're looking at all abilities. We're looking at sort of gender equity across sort of LGBTIQ plus kind of areas. So we're definitely, yeah, just trying to make sure that it's not just a one-stop shop. Yep, cool, we've now got women on board, so that's our job's done. It's sort of like, no, but let's look at the diversity of women as well. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's been a great sort of decade for women's sport, and hopefully in the next 10 years it'll progress even further.
And one of the things that they did out there during that conference, I really loved that everyone would receive like this kind of cardboard thing and would have to write down their pledge, you know, towards women's sports. And I loved it, and everyone's pledges in all the panels, and you know, chatting with people along the day, throughout the day, were so inspiring. And I was wondering if I could play this one back to you and ask you if you could put your pledge in words for us.
Oh, well, it's interesting. We actually have a gender equity in sport pledge for Women Sport Australia, mm-hmm. and it's something we launched sort of on our website, and it's just very much free to join up and just sort of showing people that we're committed to the cause of making sure that women and girls in sport are given equal opportunities as boys and men. Like, for me, it very much comes down to, I want my future daughter to have the same opportunities as my future son. So,
oh, I love it. Yeah. It makes me emotional even. Yeah, yes. But yes, this is what it's all about, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's what it boils down to for me. And like, it's an area I have to be passionate in, obviously, because it's sort of something I work in and I give my voluntary time to. But I think it's just the right thing to do and to be a cause that I support. So yeah, it's incredible. And yeah, like, people are very much welcome to have a look at our Women's Sport Australia website and take the pledge and sort of, yeah, join the movement. And yeah, sort of, we'll sort of stay connected and let you know how you can sort of continue to support and work with us.
Yeah, and thank you at this point for your great work. I mean, I'm so far away and I'm not actively involved in any sports anymore at this point, and so I'm not benefiting directly from what you're doing. But I mean, every single woman that's lifted, that's empowered, is, you know, a win for the whole community. So thank you so much. Great,
exactly.
Great work.
Exactly. No, well, I'm happy to accept that thanks on behalf of Women's Sport Australia. But I think, yeah, the more that we can do as a community to sort of provide opportunities and help others out, the better we're all going to be for it.
Definitely. And I would suggest, Jen, that we're moving on now with our next three categories. I'm holding them up into the camera right now. It's always a little bit funny to get the draw done, but you can decide with which little bubble here we're going to proceed.
Awesome. Maybe let's start with the one down the bottom of the screen.
Let's see. Oh, that's a good one, actually. They're the little... notes are taken in German, so you wouldn't understand.
No, I wouldn't. I don't speak any German.
This is the category, like the throw-in, that I asked you prior to our interview to kind of prepare. is your topic that you feel deserves a stage. What did you bring for us?
Well, I think, like, I'm always talking about women's sport, and, like, I think it's that is a cause that's so close to my heart, but I feel like we've already spoken so significantly about that potentially I should have a think about whether there's another topic that mm-hmm. I can sort of talk on and stuff. Like, I think at the moment I'm actually doing a lot of self-reflection and just trying to work out sort of time management and prioritizing. Ooh. I've always been a very busy person. I juggle lots and lots of different things. So I have, like I've said, my day job where I'm a CEO and it's quite busy, my board role. I still do the odd dance class here and there. I sort of have really great relationships with my family and my husband and lots of different groups of friends. So it's often sort of quite a balancing act.
Interesting, yes. I can relate.
So what I'm doing at the moment is sort of trying to practice being more, more valued with my time and making sure I'm not overcomplicating everything that I'm doing and really trying to prioritize that I don't need to say yes to every invitation and every sort of thing that comes up and is thrown my way. And I'm just sort of trying to find the joy in saying no to things because it opens me up to do other things. So
that is so interesting that you actually put it into these words, saying finding the joy in saying no, because that's one of the toughest things for me, because I always like when everyone's happy and harmony all over the place. But if you say no, you set your boundaries, and sometimes that's not what people want to hear. And I hate that, and I'm scared sometimes, and it takes all of my courage. And I love the phrase that you used, finding the joy in saying no. Beautiful.
I know, and it's something I'm still very much only starting to work on and develop, because I think often I think I'm going to let people down if I say no, but I think sometimes I overvalue what the commitment's going to be, and that, like, often people aren't as devastated when I say no to things as I think they might be. And, like, I think being able to explain that, like, I've filled up my cup with too much this week, so I actually just need a night for myself, and I can't go to this commitment. That's how it is. And actually, a perfect example of how I put this into practice was I flew back from New York in the USA on the 31st of July when the Matildas were playing in Melbourne that night against Canada. Mm-hmm. And I was offered tickets and I wanted to go with all my might. And I was like, well, I should go because I'm the president of Women's Sport Australia. But I was also horribly jet lagged, and just I knew that I was not going to be in my best state of mind if I went to this game. So I said, thank you for the tickets, but I need to just watch this game from the couch at home because I just flew in from New York. So that, I reckon, 2 months ago, I would have given a very different answer and would have forced myself to go, and just, like, it's an expectation. And I think a lot of the time it's the expectation that I put on myself to do a lot and to not let anyone down. And actually, people don't care as much as I think. So, yeah, I'm just continuing to practice that. So that's, sort of a bit of a theme that's front and center for me at the moment.
Interesting way of seeing it, right? People probably don't care as much as I think. Yeah, can be very well true.
Exactly.
I love that. Cool. And you know what, the funny thing about this is that usually if you overcome this hesitation of saying no because of all the reasons that we just mentioned, people tend to even respect you more sometimes, or tend to be super understanding or supportive or whatever, right?
You just have
to actually make that
start
step.
Practicing it. And and like, I found even a good initial step has been to, like, not say no, but not say yes. Just say, I'll have a look and I'll get back to you, which sort of takes the heat out of trying to make a snap decision, but gives you the power to just really consider things and then say, listen, I've actually got a lot on my plate and it'd suit me better if we did something next month or whatever it might be. And yeah, then you're sort of, yeah, not put on the spot as much and able to control what you're saying yes to and committing to.
I feel like that's such a female topic as well, right? Trying to please everyone. So, great approach. I really like that.
Thank you.
And let's move on with the next little bubble.
Where are you going? Let's go the one up the top now. I get too confused with left and right because we're on different screens. Yes, so I was let's go up and down.
Up is great. Okay, I love this next one. It's called Head Coach.
Okay.
And in this category, I am always asking my guests who or what, it doesn't have to be a person, you can be very creative here, is or was a factor of, you know, pulling you out of difficult situations or helping you or coaching you out or bringing you back to the surface after falling, or you know what I'm getting at though.
Yeah, no, I know exactly. So a like sort of component. Strong mentors and things like that that have put me on my path. Oh, I've had a lot of different people that have sort of helped me along the way and sort of looked out for me. But I think the first one that came to mind was my year 11 and 12 drama teacher. Like I sort of, had sort of always been quite academically focused at school and said yes to lots of things and was in sort of the band and the play and the dance troupe and all of the different sort of areas. But I really sort of loved performing, and I just think my drama teacher was just such a great influence on sort of myself and making me the confident sort of person that I've become today. He was definitely a confidant about sort of what I was wanting to do once I left school. He was someone I did a 6-month gap year, and I worked teaching English in Russia in St. Petersburg in 2007. And when I was given that opportunity, he was one of the people that I really sort of talked it through with and everything like that. So he was an enormous sort of influence on me and just a really trusted, great teacher. And I did my sort of 6-month gap year in Russia, and then I sort of came back, and unfortunately he'd been diagnosed with cancer, and he sort of later passed away that year after I finished school. And I think I'm not sure whether it made his influence on me even more pertinent and front and center, but Mr. Constable was just an extremely pivotal figure for when I was going through those sort of later teenage years and making decisions about my future. So before I sort of got into my career, he was just a real influence and mentor for me.
Beautiful. And I just picked something up because you said something about he helped you stepping into your confidence. My words again, not
100% he did reciting,
Yeah, that's and you know, confident again is very important as soon as you want to say no, for example, and for so many other things in life. So please do us the favor and explain what confidence actually means for you and how, you know, your teacher made you develop this very important character trait for you.
I think it's very much around sort of your self-belief and confidence within yourself. So I think that very much stems from being content with who you are and not sort of having doubts about your ability. So I think Mr. C was really good at sort of positive praise, being able to give feedback on sort of acting performances and just general improvisations and things that we would do in our theatre studies classes that were really meaningful bits of feedback that you could then adapt. He would never sort of tear you down to shreds and say that was terrible. He'd always have really constructive sort of feedback. And I think that
That's
really helped me
too.
To grow. Yeah, exactly. Like, I was given great opportunities. I played Elizabeth Bennet in the school play of Pride and Prejudice. So, yeah, I think being able to be given some of those opportunities to lead and be on stage and deliver lots of lines. I love public speaking. I love sort of doing podcasts and having conversations like this. So I think that really helped me with sort of being able to articulate and speak properly when I'm in public. And yeah, it's been sort of definitely a big factor in my confidence to be able to take that into any sort of public speaking and public forums that I attend now.
That is so lovely. And I'm sure that he knows about the influence that he had on you, the positive influence. That's beautiful, really.
Yeah.
Bless these type of teachers. I have someone like that for sure, right? And I mean,
exactly.
I feel like that's special. I don't know how the system, the academic and scholaric system is here in Australia, but in Germany, it's this very special type of employment. That there's no type of competition between teachers. Once you're a teacher, you're in there and you can't be expelled really or fired. And it has definitely positives about it, but there are so many negatives as well, because you don't really have to push, or you don't have to prove yourself as a teacher. And so these type of teachers who actually are in this job with all their heart and actually care about the young people that they're influencing, just as yourself, it's just gold. It's
amazing.
So much.
Yeah, when there's people who go above and beyond in their job to just not only provide the education experience but provide a life experience, it's
definitely
incredible.
Nice one. All right, and while we were still speaking about this incredible influence your teacher had, I opened up the last little bubble.
Yep.
And pulled out the last category. It's the shootout, which means I am going to shoot a couple of questions right at you.
Yep, no problem.
You don't have to answer super, super brief or super quick. It's just, another way, another tool to get to know you. Are
Excellent.
You ready though, Jen?
Hit me.
Hit me with your best shot. All right, first one. Outside or inside sports?
Oh, I feel like I should say inside sports because of table tennis and my day job that I work in. And also because my background is sort of dancing and recreation, which is more so an indoor sport. So, yeah, I think I'd have to say indoor sports.
True. I said inside, but you totally get what I mean. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know many people who would probably go with indoors. Nice.
Just mixing it up, being different.
Just mixing it up, of course. The next one probably is no less simple. What's your favorite discipline of them all? I mean, you're engaged in basically everything, right?
Oh, I know. And it depends whether it's sort of playing or watching or, like, I think I was so ingrained into Australian football as a young child.
Nice.
And being a supporter of the men's sort of AFL teams that is probably my discipline or my sport of choice, because I've just been raised in such an AFL mad sort of part of Australia, in Melbourne, and in my family that's sort of the number one sort of sport that we would talk about. It's interesting now that there's so many opportunities for females to play Australian football.
Mm-hmm.
People ask me often, like, would you have played if there were more opportunities for you when you were younger? And actually, I don't know whether I would. I'm not a really hard at it contact sport kind of person. So I would like to think I would have sort of played a little bit. But I think when push comes to shove, I don't know how much I would have wanted to sort of get my hands dirty and roll around in the mud and things like that. So, yeah. But I think it's incredible that girls have the option now to choose. So.
And that's what it's all about, right? Having
exactly.
the option. And those girls who want to, they can go. Love
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So, Aussie football, not the round ball, but
yes.
the actual football.
The oval ball.
The
yeah,
oval
that's
ball.
Us.
Next one is kind of a joke, more of. Is it rather Jen or Genevieve?
It is Jen. So I'm Genevieve, but I only get called Genevieve or Genevieve if I'm in trouble. So,
all right.
Yes. So always Jen. Yep.
Next one is more technical. What's your most important tool in your day-to-day life?
Ooh, is it sad if I say my mobile phone? Because it's just sort of something that I end up using so often. And it's interesting because I've been doing lots of sort of talking about prioritizing my time, and I don't want to get sucked into the vortex of always using my phone. But it's just such a useful tool. Like, it's now how you pay for everything. It's your connection to your friends and family. It's like your connection to the internet. And anytime you're not sure of something, you can just quickly Google it. Yeah, so it's a bit of a sad answer, but yeah, I think it's probably my mobile phone.
That's a totally fair answer though as well. You spoke a lot about self-organization and juggling so many different things at a time. What would you say is the most important app or, you know, then tool within that phone to help you stay on top of it all?
Oh, I think I'm a real calendar girl. Like, mm-hmm. I just love having my appointments sort of scheduled and things so that I can sort of start my day and just check my calendar. I've sort of got different color coding. I'm very organized, sort of for green for my like work things, sort of red for my board things, blue for social things, like purple for exercise and like dancing and like commitments and things. So yeah, I like to sort of just be able to have a bit of a snapshot of sort of what my day looks like or what my week looks like coming up. And yeah, like I also have a big physical diary at home where I sort of write out the monthly calendar, and I need to have lots of lines because I like to do lots of things on different days. So yeah, as well as having like the online calendar on my phone where I put my appointments, I often then translate them into the physical diary so that I can have that as a visual representation as well.
So nothing gets lost at all.
Yeah, exactly. I like to know. And yeah, it's funny because my mum and dad operated like that, and mum would always be saying to dad, did you put it on the big calendar? So like I find myself saying the same thing to my husband. So it's very funny.
So you are your parents now.
Exactly. That's what happens.
I think it does to all of us. Next one. The most memorable sports event you've ever been to. And I can imagine you've been to quite a lot.
Yeah, I definitely have. And I think for me, it comes back to Australian football. So my team, the Hawks, Hawthorn Hawks, they sort of defied the odds and made it into the 2008 grand final. And I would have been about 20 years old. And miraculously, I was a Hawks member and I went into like the lottery for tickets. And my mum, myself and my brother Archie all got tickets. So they were standing tickets. They weren't even with a seat or anything like that. The Hawks were definitely not the favourites for the game. Mm-hmm. The Geelong Cats who we played were the favourites. But we were like, oh my God, this will be amazing just to go to a grand final. And then against all the odds, the Hawks ended up winning the grand final.
Oh my God, it was a
big upset.
Like an American movie.
Exactly. And like there was one player, Shane Crawford, and he'd played for so many years, and it was just such a fairy tale for him to be able to win the grand final as sort of the captain for the club. And it was, he then retired after that, and it was just, for me, it was still one of the best days of my life because we went in just not thinking we were going to win and it was going to be a nice experience. And then we did win and it was just incredible. So I'm lucky that I've subsequently seen a few more grand finals that the Hawks have won. But that one is the absolute one that sticks out because it was the first one and it was unexpected. And yeah, just such a beautiful day to share with my mum and my brother as well.
I love that. Really, really nice. And really, it sounds like, I don't know, like a like a Netflix series right now.
Yeah. Right? I can sell the movie rights to anyone who wants
it. Yes, you definitely can. We have a couple more. The one thing the world has to know about Aussie sports.
Ooh. We do it pretty well down under is what I've got to say. Like, I think one thing that I'm pretty proud of is that there's sort of a sports index that is put together every sort of few years around affinity and fan connection to Australian sports teams. And four of the top five sporting teams that the community feel a really strong connection to are female sporting teams, and I think that's such a special statistic. Yay. So
love it.
I believe it's the Matildas, the Australian women's cricket team, the Diamonds netball team, and I think it's the rugby sevens team who have sort of seen great success as well. So yeah, I think that that's a really incredible stat to show that, like, there's just so much positive fan sentiment around Australian women's sporting teams, and that's been pivotal in the growth of women's sport.
Love it. And then the last one is like kind of a double question. What is your favorite part of your job and the most challenging one?
Oh, so like my job, if I'm looking at my CEO of Table Tennis Victoria job, I've been in this role for 18 months, and like, we are a tiny organization. So it's myself and two staff members that run all different, I think, like state tournaments, and there's sort of 4,000 members plus a whole lot of additional participants, 64 different clubs across the state. And like, I love my job because every day is different. There's always sort of something different that I'm focusing on. So some days it's marketing, some days it's an event. Recently this year, me and my two staff plus some other people, we had to build 60 table tennis tables. So I'm now an expert at putting together table tennis tables.
Nice.
So yeah, like, it's, you end up doing every sort of job. It's not just long lunches and sponsorship meetings. For a small sport like table tennis, you're getting your hands dirty. So I love that aspect of my job, that there's always sort of something different to be done. But I would say the biggest challenge is resourcing, that we are such a small sport and there's limited sort of funding for sports like table tennis, which doesn't have the big broader appeal and commercial sort of broadcast rights or sponsorship dollars. So you have to be sort of really creative, and that's sometimes quite challenging. But yeah, I love it day to day, and like, I wouldn't change it unless maybe I could get a $200,000 sponsorship deal. That'd be great.
Hoping that will happen, for sure, crossing my fingers for you.
Exactly. If any of your listeners want to sponsor Table Tennis Victoria, please get in touch.
I'm sure it will happen. No, but seriously, excellent. Jen, thank you so much. This was incredible. Thank you for your energy, again, for the work overall that you're doing for all the women, all us girls out there. For all the educational purposes that we definitely can grab or get out of this. This was really fun. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. It's been so lovely to speak to you. And yeah, if anyone wants to find out anything more about Women's Sport Australia, you can look us up, womensportaustralia.com.au, or Table Tennis Victoria, tabletennisvic.org.au. And we... yeah, like, if you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. So yeah, Jen Dorman, please find me. And yeah, I'm always happy to sort of pass on any information about myself and my career and any advice to the next generation.
Thank you so much. We will, of course, put all of these links and contact touch points into the show notes so nothing gets lost. And now, Jen, you get to close up this episode. I always give the last word back to my guest. And I'm asking you guys every single time to, you know, reach out directly to our audience, to all the girls and maybe boys out there as well. And, like, motivate them with a little pep talk to, you know, close this up. Which would contain the reasons why it's so important to believe in yourself and your visions and your goals, and why you may never stop pulling through, pushing through.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I feel like I sort of launched into that, but that was all my following sort of stuff. But yeah, I think it's so important, and I've loved being able to chat to you today. And what I'd really love to impart on all the listeners is just to follow your passion, and yeah, sort of try and find that purpose that you're gonna really enjoy everything that you're doing. I would encourage you to make sure that you are following those causes that you're really passionate about. So for me, obviously that's women and girls in sport, and making sure that there's equal opportunities, and just making sure that you're doing what you can, because if everyone does that little bit of what they can and calls out when like the women's game should be on the main channel but it's not, or if you go to games and sort of speak through like attendance and watching sport and things like that, it's gonna make a difference. It all adds up. So yeah, like I think it's just, yeah, following your passion and making sure you're committed to the cause. And yeah, like please follow me, connect with me if you want to get in touch. I would love to hear from you.
Perfect ending. Thank you so much, Jen.
No problem at all.